Hello and welcome to the Our Sam Music Podcast, the weekly podcast that brings you the best of independent music. I'm Adam, the podcast host and the deputy editor of the Our Sam website, and I'm back with more of the latest from the world of independent music. Stick around as I bring you exclusive interviews as well as a selection of the tracks from the indie music scene. In this episode, I've got some incredible content to bring you from the Our Sound Artist of the Week, Sinker, who recorded a track just for this podcast. As well as that, I've got a number of tracks that have been taken hot off the press from the indie music scene. And later in the podcast, I've got an exclusive interview with Lucy Nicol, who spoke to me about her latest book, The 27 Club, so stick around for that one. As ever, if you do like the podcast, you can like and share it, and to stay up to date, you can check out our website, oursoundmusic.com, and also follow us on Twitter at oursoundmusic3. The track that opened the podcast this week was Golden Days by Taxi Rank. They're a five-piece indie rock band from Swansea, who have previously had material played on the likes of BBC Radio Wales. That track came out on the Friday just gone, and I'm a really big fan of that one. Now the next track I've got for you is the Our Sound Single of the Week, and this week we've gone for Citizen 202 by Kavanagh. The track is as explosive as it is energetic, and it really showcases the band's Smashing Pumpkins inspired alt-rock sound. I think you're going to love it, so check it out. That was Kavanagh with their new track and our single of the week, Citizen 202. I really think that band are going places. Now, moving on, and I've got our choice for hottest new release. This track comes from the Reading-based four-piece St. Peter's Dream. The group formed back in 2019 and have graced the likes of Manchester and Birmingham with their high-energy live performances. Here they are with their new track, Maybe Yesterday.
Pass out. Oh, skate in a way, emancipate your time today. Get ocean, clean for a cloud of lemon haze. And do you ever wonder, wonder to yourself, two blue ticks for conscious health, polo duffels for your wealth.
That was the Reading-based band St. Peter's Dream with our choice for the hottest new release, Maybe Yesterday. What a tune that is. You can read more about that track, as well as any of the track that you hear on this week's podcast, if you just head over to the website, oursoundmusic.com. Now next on my playlist, I've got the first of two tracks from the Our Sound Artist of the Week. This is the second time we have been able to feature the Artist of the Week on the podcast, and this time it's the hard-hitting indie rock band Sinker. The band self-produced their debut EP, FWYK, which was released in April last year. Since then, they have received airtime from a number of national radio stations, including BBC Radio 1. This track is their latest single and is taken from their forthcoming EP, which is due to be released later this month. Here it is, Skies.
Take me to the skies, and it's
That was Skies, which is the latest single from indie rockers Sinker, who are the Our Sound Artist of the Week. The thing I really like about that track is the way it really goes for the jugular right from the start, you know, grabs your attention immediately. They're also a band that you will be hearing later in the podcast when I play you an acoustic version of theirs, which has been exclusively recorded for this podcast, so definitely stick around for that one. Before that, though, I've got an interview with Lucy Nicole to show you. Now, she has recently brought out a book called The 27 Club that tells the story of a music fan, Emma, who struggles to come to terms with the death of Kurt Cobain. The book dives deep into themes of mental health and substance abuse while always remaining light-hearted and funny. I caught up with Lucy recently, and I started by asking her what the inspiration was behind the book.
I started writing it, so it's my second book. My first book was a series of unfortunate stereotypes. It was non-fiction, and that was about mental health and stigma and the media. And I've always been interested in both mental health and the media because I work in PR and media, and I've had mental health problems. So those two areas have always interested me. And then after I wrote a series of unfortunate stereotypes, I kind of thought, I've got nothing else to say about me. And I thought, well, why don't I make it up? Why don't I have a crack at fiction? And music to me just felt like a brilliant place to start. And I think the other reason I was really keen on exploring the 27 Club narrative was because, I mean, I volunteered in addiction recovery, and I just feel that addiction is one of the most stigmatized mental health problems. People see it as a lifestyle choice, and that kind of links to this whole 27 Club narrative, you know, like, oh, they're living the rock and roll lifestyle. It's all partying. It's all, you know, and it isn't. And there's a human being behind that. So I thought it was a really good vehicle to tell a story, to explore stigma and to explore humanity, and kind of to ask readers to not only question the headlines that we consume from the media, but to question the headlines that we tell ourselves.
You mentioned mental health there. Was that a kind of a goal or something that you wanted to achieve with this book? You know, speak about that further.
Absolutely. And I think as well, because I was, so the book opens in 94, the protagonist is 26. I was actually 16, I think, maybe in 94. But I started experiencing panic attacks around that time. And I didn't know what they were at the time. I just didn't really understand what it was. I didn't understand it was a mental health problem. I went as far as thinking, oh, maybe I should cut back on caffeine or whatever naughty things I was doing on a night out. So I wanted to encourage people to look at mental health stigma, to explore their own experiences, and to kind of look at how things have changed over the years as well, because, like, say, in the 90s, we just didn't really talk about it in the same way. I just thought humour, for me, is a good way to start conversations in some ways. It's just a different way in. Mm. It's really about breaking stigma and just kind of thinking about what is behind some of the mental health problems that we might face.
It's written, obviously, in the first person, which makes it quite a personal story. It's like reading a diary almost, you know, and you feel like the character Emma and the reader are really quite linked. You know, was that a sort of aim, to make it that relatable?
I think so. I think a lot of people have said that. I've had a few people read the book and say, oh my God, I feel like you've read my diaries, or, yeah, you know, this is exactly where I was in the 90s, kind of in terms of where my head was in the 90s. I think, well, one, it's just a style that I like to write in. So I'm writing my second novel at the minute, and that's first person, but told through three different characters. So I think there's that. But I think also when you are talking about mental health experiences, it just enables you to I suppose, get inside someone's head. And because I've experienced anxiety and anxiety attacks, and my background is very different to Emma's, and I haven't had, I mean, no spoilers, but I haven't been through, no, you've read it, yeah, but I haven't been through some of the experiences that she has. I understand panic attacks, I understand anxiety, and I just wanted to go straight there rather than trying to explain it from a, you know, a different perspective. I just wanted to go straight in there because it's all about what's in your head. So, yeah.
Emma has an obsession, you could call it, really, with the 27 Club. Is that something that, you know, either fascinated you in the past or fascinates you now?
Yeah, so I remember when my parents got the paper and told me Kurt Cobain had died, and I was absolutely gutted. And like I say, I was younger than Emma, so I was about 15, maybe 16, can't remember exactly. But I've written a couple of pieces for NME exploring this, and I think it's because when I was young, I had this real fascination with drug use. So whereas now as an adult, I'm interested in recovery and people, you know, how can people who experience the darkest depths of addiction come out the other side? That's something I'm really interested in. When I was 14, 15, 16, I was more fascinated by it, more intrigued. I never experienced any of those problems. So I think there's something in what I've learned as well, is that, you know, we can all, any of us can all, you know, if we were all to drink alcohol or to take the same drugs, it doesn't mean we're all going to respond in the same way to it. And that's what I'm interested in, that it's not about, oh, I choose to live this rock and roll lifestyle, or I choose to party, or, you know, because we can all do that. But why does it really affect some people? And that's because of what else they've got going on, whether that be past trauma, whether that be diagnosed mental health problems, you know, whether that be their social circumstances, poverty, fame, interestingly. So, yeah, so I always thought the tortured rock star was almost something to aspire to when I was a kid. And now reflecting on it, and, you know, now I know, having worked with services, addiction recovery services, having, you know, lost some of our childhood friends to drugs, I know that there is just so much more to it. And, you know, it's interesting for me to reflect. So I'm hoping that it can help other people reflect on that as well.
That kind of, you know, rock star aspiration that you just mentioned, that a lot of kids probably, you know, still do have. Do you think that is a way that people who are going through tough times, what have you, do you think listening to those kind of artists and that kind of music is a way that they express or experience their hardship?
Yeah, and I think for lots of reasons. So I remember being a fan of Prince and Roxette, and then when I was 14, meeting my first boyfriend who was into punk and Nirvana and, you know, grunge and everything. And I got really into Hole and Babes in Toyland and Senseless Things and Nirvana, obviously, and Mudhoney. And it obviously influenced the way I dressed. And somehow, I think because I had low self-esteem, I felt very ugly when I was young and I was very shy. It gave me a sense of relief somehow. I don't know if it's like, I talk about this a little bit in the book. I mean, obviously, I cannot speak on behalf of Janis Joplin. I don't even know enough about her. And, you know, obviously, she's sadly not with us. But, you know, there's something about how she dressed that kind of, and the persona that you create that kind of takes the heat off who you are, and you can be whoever you want to be. And I sort of felt that with alternative music and the styles and everything that went with it. But I think also in listening to music like that, I think there's some kind of like, you can indulge your angst in it. And for some reason, even though the music can be quite dark and the lyrics can be quite dark, I just think for some reason it's reassuring because other people are feeling something dark or, you know, so yeah, I do think that probably, but then again, you know, growing up is so difficult and challenging for everybody. And, you know, I'm sure that other people find their way through, you know, when it was in the 90s, it was like rave music, and other people find their way through, you know, different means for different reasons. So, but yeah, it did it for me.
Yeah. That kind of obsession with 27 Club is quite obviously prevalent in the book. The thing with the 27 Club, of course, is a lot of people are aware of it. A lot of people are fascinated by it. But do you feel like it, you know, sometimes it can be a bit, you know, romanticised, you know, the idea of there being a 27 Club?
Yeah, I just think that the reason I've called it the 27 Club is because it's a headline, it's an idea, it's a narrative that we know and that's very easy to digest and very easy to kind of go, ah, that's what happens. You become a rock star. You take drugs, you drink too much, you die at 27. It's really easy to say that. It's not as easy to dig a bit deeper. And I think that I'm obviously interested in that narrative, which is why I've written about it. But I think the way we, and I include myself here, sort of how we engage with musicians, I don't mean, you know, personally as friends, I'm not friends with anybody that I've talked about, but, you know, Amy Winehouse, for example, I feel like when she was on Nevermind the Buzzcocks and she was drunk and we're all like, ah, it's so funny, oh, look at Amy Winehouse, oh, she's such good crack, she's so funny, and you're kind of like, you're quite drawn to her because of that. But then, obviously, she was struggling with lots of mental health problems and drug and alcohol problems. And then we see those sort of playing out. And so all of a sudden, we kind of go off it. It's like, well, now we're seeing the ugly side of it. You know, we see that the fun bit, somebody being a bit drunk, when we see what's driving that, all of a sudden, we think it's ugly. And we're like, you know, look at Amy Winehouse like this, like, you know, look at these awful pictures of her, and it's so, so sad. And then all of a sudden we're blaming her. So when we think it's a bit of fun and she's doing it for fun, we think it's okay. When there's something darker driving it, why do we turn our backs on the individual? We should be angry that somebody whose music we love or, you know, who we admire is experiencing such difficult problems. But all too often, you know, it's the individual experiencing them who gets the shit. And then the only way you see them then redeem themselves is after death. Yeah. And, you know, all of a sudden it's like poor Amy Winehouse. We weren't saying poor Amy Winehouse when she had pictures with bloodstained shoes, and I just think that's really sad. So yes, we are fascinated by it as a public, I think, or, you know, certainly as music fans. But I just think we need to consider the fact that they're not just music assets; they are human beings.
Yeah, you know, it's important to realise, of course, that the people that suffer with substance abuse and depression and all that kind of stuff, they're not just famous people. You know, and I think I really got that from the book, you know, because Emma's going through her kind of stuff. And, you know, was that something as well that you wanted to just sort of show up? You know, it's not just famous people that have these problems. It's actually everyday folk.
Well, yeah, absolutely. It's something I've worked in for a while. I started working with Time to Change back in 2016. And I, you know, I've experienced stigma, and it really I think it's just it goes beyond as well, kind of the everyday person like me versus somebody like Kurt Cobain. I think it goes even beyond that. And it's that it doesn't matter what your experience is, it can hit you so like I said, if you have experienced trauma, then, you know, there can be mental health problems that might come from that. But also that actually the brain can just do these things, you know. I'm working with a charity called Action on Postpartum Psychosis, and there are people who have had no past trauma or past mental health problems who, after giving birth, experience a severe psychotic episode. You know, why? What is it? Hormonal? Is it to do, like, what is it? That there are so many reasons for it. It really can hit anyone regardless. Some people may be more susceptible to mental health problems, but you just can't make an assumption that you will or you won't experience it.
Yeah, I've just got one more question. The book has been really quite well received. It's got some great reviews that I've been reading. How does that sort of feel as an author to have a book that you pour so much of your soul into to be received like that?
Oh, it's amazing. I always feel like an imposter. I still have low self-esteem. I am very self-critical and get very nervous about these things. So it's just been lovely. There have been a couple of 1 and 2 stars, but do you know what I figure? If you have a look, it's at, like, you know, people like Matt Haig or, I don't know, Joanne Harris, they will have had a 1-star review. So that's just what I look to. But yeah, I think generally they have been fabulous. I've had some great reviews, and it's that I just think nostalgia opens conversations. I think, I don't know anyone who doesn't enjoy a bit of nostalgia. Mm. And I think for people to be able to relate to that and find fun and familiarity in that, and then be able to kind of take in this mental health journey of a 26-year-old girl in Hull is great. So yeah, I'm over the bloody moon with them.
That's great. That was me chatting to Lucy Nicole, the author of The 27 Club. Just at the end there, Lucy mentioned that she still has confidence issues, and if you read her book, which I absolutely recommend you do, you'll be left wondering why. It really is a great read. Now, I'll give you a bit of a breather after that fairly intense interview with a slightly softer tune. So here's Jess Kemp with Eggshells.
Have you ever felt strange? 'Cause strange is how I feel. Stuck behind the wheel, nowhere left to hide. Hate is the strongest word that I have ever heard. It's made this mark on me. But tonight, let the walking on eggshells around you.
That was Jess Kemp with her single Eggshells, a really nice, uplifting and pop-inspired tune. Now, Jess is going to be playing at the Our Sound All Dayer in Hull, which happens in September. You can grab yourself tickets now. It's going to be a hell of a day for sure. Now, the next track I've got for you keeps the acoustic vibe coming, and it's Sean O'Reilly with End of the Line.
Was gone with a razor blade. Family lines fell apart that day, and I picked a tooth, and I was armed in blood. Warm my smile, I'll be understood. See, tearing skin never felt so fine. She said, "You're fine, but would you hold me? Would you hold me sometime? We'll burn the bridge and the boat. No worry lines anymore. For the archer cries to a holy ghost, and a soldier points to the end where broke. But rippers out, well, limb from limb, roots and stem. To the end. Days I was lost in love, a walk of shame beat that dog, and I told them all, no giving in, there's no money left, we're all skinned from sin. But would you be there when I fell apart to build it up again? What a last ride, to the last ride you'll find. Well, hold yourself and your own. What's the point? Well, now anymore, 'cause purpose lies behind the eyes. Pay the fine and step inside to a brave new world you were wishing for. Sign all the times to the end, oh. To the end, oh. To the end of the line.
That was End of the Line by London-based Irish singer-songwriter Sean O'Reilly. Now that tune just oozes Irishness, I'm sure you'll agree, and it follows on from Sean's critically acclaimed last single, which is called Who the Hell. Now both tracks were taken from his second album, Burn the Boat, which is out in June. Now this next track I've got for you is going to be the penultimate one for this week, and it comes from Liverpool-based band Columbia, who released this track last Friday. Despite lockdown being hard for many artists, Columbia have consistently been increasing their fan base through the likes of Twitter and building a strong, loyal community who follow the band. Here they are with Where Did It All Go?
Said you'd never see how far we'd make it. Well, I sailed on the sea for a little while today, 'cause everything we had went back to basics. Well, it lent on me for a little while today. Standing in the light, reached out to save you. Lost in a world with no. Figure out if we can take it, but it's lost at sea for a little while again, and it's the same. could never see how far we'd make it.
That was Liverpool band Columbia with their new single, Where Did It All Go? I really like the intro to that track, and I think it's got quite a Let It Be kind of sound to it. Defo worth keeping an eye on them. And with that, we are now at the end of the podcast. As ever, I hope you have enjoyed listening, and I hope you listen next week, where I'll have more exclusive content for you. Now, some of you may remember me telling you that last week that our interview with Sheraton's was due this week. I'm afraid I did get my dates mixed up there, but I can promise you that the interview will be in the next podcast, in next week's programme. As well as that, we'll have appearances from Sam Lambeth, who will be in session playing two tracks especially for this podcast. Now, in the meantime, you can catch up on the podcast on Spotify and via our website. And to stay up to date with all things Our Sound, you can follow us on Twitter at OurSoundMusic3. Oh yeah, and definitely make sure to get your tickets for the Our Sound All Day, which are available for purchase on Skiddle. Now, as promised, and to play us out, we've got an exclusive acoustic track from this week's Artist of the Week. Here's Sinker with Messiah. Thanks for listening. Take care.
1, 2, 3, 4... Fear is what is visceral. Me and soul dim the light I came to shine. So.